Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Ball just on the Detroit side of the 50. Slovis steps up to the center. Eli Cox takes a knee, and it is over. The preseason comes to an end with a dominating performance by the Texans, 26-7. They go 2-1 on the preseason, and look forward to the opener, September 7th at L.A. Let's go. Houston, ready for the Rams.
All of our coaches, it's important for me to get input from everyone. Our position coaches, special teams coaches, we're all in this together. So it's not just ultimately the decision will come down between myself and Nick. It won't be a rash decision because we've been thinking about this for a while, and it all works itself out in the end. And I know we'll have, wherever those 53 guys are, we're going to have 53 tough guys who are mentally and physically tough and ready to hit the season run.
All right, so that's the project now for the next 24 hours or so. Put a roster together based on training camp, based on what they've seen in the offseason, based on the three games. You heard the final call right there. Mark Vandermeer on the call. The Texans win on Saturday 26-7 over the Detroit Lions, and the preseason is over. And now our long 13-day wait begins for week one to get here. Welcome in, everybody. I am Sean Pendergast on a Monday. He is Seth Payne. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm still perpetually peeved that the NFL decides to take Labor Day weekend off.
Yeah.
You know, we'll work on Christmas, but Labor Day, no, it's sacrosanct. We will not work on Labor Day weekend.
It's a long 2 weeks, man.
It's not that they're honoring Labor Day. It's that they just, especially in the Northeast where people start school after Labor Day.
Yeah.
I think it's people don't get the viewership on Labor Day that they want. So.
Yeah.
The Texans last year announced all of their final cuts basically right at the deadline on Tuesday. So for all of you who are refreshing your social media every 15 minutes trying to figure out what's going on.
It's a fool's errand.
Yeah, there's probably going to be a few leaks here and there. Just, you know, if the Texans are trying to see if there's interest for a trade or something like that.
Yeah.
But by and large, you're probably not going to hear a lot of news until tomorrow. That's what I suspect. I might be completely wrong on that. Maybe they change their tactics.
Well, some teams have had cuts so far. You're right. I mean, D'Amico said we're going to take we don't just do this willy-nilly. We're going to take a good strong look at it. And this is granted, there are a few positions that I think the depth resides on other teams' rosters right now, probably the back end. The secondary might be one of those. There may be one or two other position groups where the Texans will be shopping around to see what recyclables people have put at the end of their driveway. But this is going through the exercise, and we'll go through it a little later in the show at 7 o'clock and look at it a little deeper. This is absolutely the deepest team they've had since D'Amico Ryans got here. There's no question about that.
Yeah, this is the first time, and a lot of our listeners have echoed that comment, that this is the most closely they've been watching the back end of the depth chart, and where it feels like, oh, man, one of these running backs is probably going to get cut, and it's going to hurt a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think people have formed an affection for Juwar Jordan. How could you not? He's a small guy that runs like a big guy, or at least tries to. He goes between the tackles. He's brave. He's flashed in the preseason.
He's looked good. That's the big thing. That's the big thing.
But especially
thing,
as a smaller guy. You love the smaller guys that just do everything.
Oh, for sure.
Everything that a smaller guy needs to do. Like, okay, is he scrappy? Is he tough? All of that. It looks like he is.
Yeah.
But he might just get squeezed out because of numbers. British Brooks, likewise. So there's a lot of guys that people really, really like, and hopefully the Texans can keep on the practice squad, but who are at risk of being cut in the next 24 hours or so.
Yeah, we'll go through some of those battles here. I think we'll do it more at 7 o'clock when we've got a little bit more room to kind of spread the whole thing out here. It feels to me, Seth, after doing kind of the chicken scratch math on the back of a napkin last night, it feels like there's about six or seven spots that are in a state of flux right now, kind of fluid, and there's like 14 or 15 guys going for those six or seven spots right now. We'll lay out all the names and stuff later in the show. As far as the game on Saturday goes, the end result, you know, that's not going to impact the Texans nor the Lions one iota during the regular season. I do think there are a couple of takeaways I had from it, though, that were encouraging to me that do map more towards big picture stuff. And the first is the depth. You know, that is your depth out there fighting against another team's depth. These last two games, the win over the Panthers and the win over the Lions. Look, you won those two games by a combined 46-10. Your backup guys, I don't know if they're more talented than the Lions guys, but this kind of goes to my second point, which is the way that they've executed. I don't care if it's been the ones, twos, or threes out there on either side of the ball. This is at least an indicator of a, on the offensive side especially, a better coached team than last season.
Yeah, and I think you already started off taking everything with a grain of salt in the preseason, but then last week especially, because it was the Panthers who were a bad football team last year, one of the worst defenses in league history last year, you take that with an extra grain of salt. Mm-hmm. This week it's going against the Detroit Lions, and it sounds like they had a very competitive joint practice on Thursday when it was ones versus the ones. But then when you get into the depth, your team is really taking another good team's depth to the woodshed.
Yeah.
So that's good to see, and I don't think it's something that we would have seen in the preseason last year necessarily. Yeah. Graham Mertz, I don't know where the hell that came from.
Dude.
14 of 16, and the two incompletions might have just been miscommunications between him and the receiver.
Yeah.
So it was even better than the 14 of 16 might suggest. He didn't make a bad pass. He had the one to Cephas in the end zone where Cephas tapped his chest on the way back to the huddle. And I think he just, you know, because the ball was placed right there in bounds. If he had just looked forward earlier and gotten outside. And then there was the one down the sideline. Likewise, it dropped exactly where the wide receiver could have caught it along the sideline.
Yeah.
So whether it was miscommunication or whatever, I mean, he was, for all intents and purposes, he basically had a perfect first half.
He did. Yeah, he was 14 of 16 for 145 yards. Well, the Cephas one, too. They went right back to it on the other side of the end zone.
Right,
Cephas.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like it's like, well, let's try it again. Let's get it right. And apparently Cephas had a catch like that in the joint practice on Thursday as well. I don't think he's making the team. There were a lot of these receivers who aren't going to make the team who had really good games on Saturday.
That Cornell Powell. Who started off on the TV broadcast. I felt so bad for Cornell Powell because Tre'Mon Smith had a nice return.
Yeah.
And because they're both wearing number 11, he was misidentified as Cornell Powell by the broadcasters. They quickly corrected it. But I felt bad for Cornell Powell. I was like, oh, man, guy gets his name. You know, they get all excited about him. His parents might have gotten excited for a brief moment.
Not even him.
Yeah, and then but then he goes off.
Yeah,
he goes off in the game.
Yeah,
good for you, Cornell Powell.
Six catches for 63 yards. Quintez Cephas had four catches for 51 yards and a touchdown. Now he did juggle a ball that turned into an interception, so that wasn't good for old Cephas. But none of these guys are making the team. But some of them may get brought back on the practice squad. I mean, the guys playing in the second half of that game are campaigning just as much to get a jersey on the practice squad.
Yeah.
As the guys in the first half are campaigning to make the 53 or work their way up the depth chart.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fighting going on out there.
Yeah, and they've, you know, Cephas has been here before, but both those guys, I think one of those guys at least might have made himself an insurance policy if he doesn't get picked up elsewhere, because I think the Texans are going to want to keep at least one of those guys.
When you were a rookie, you were drafted in the fourth round. Did you, on this day, you know, the day or 2 days after the final preseason game where they're cutting down the roster, did you think you were making the team?
Yeah, I was pretty sure. I think a coach had basically told me.
Oh, really?
Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'd had a pretty good preseason. Yeah. I knew from the offensive lineman that I was probably going to make the team.
Okay. Yeah. Because the next day, the next 24 hours, from everybody you talk to who've been on the bubble before, is they're sitting around hoping their phone doesn't ring. If your phone rings, that's a bad sign.
That was the biggest, that was a kind of a shock to me, was when I started seeing guys from my rookie class get cut.
Yeah.
And just kind of, I showed up at the facility as a couple of them were walking out, and stopped and talked to one of them. And it was, you got to remember, for a lot of guys, this is like the first time in their life they've ever been rejected from a sports team.
That's right.
You go through your entire life usually being one of the best guys on every team you've been on.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you've got a football team picking you last at recess, or not picking you
Not even picking you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not even.
They're like, no, I'm going to take the kid that eats his boogers. Yeah. No, we're not taking you.
And sometimes you don't get picked because you're the new kid and you just moved in. They don't know what you can do. This is after watching you.
Right.
For 8 jillion snaps through the preseason, they're like, yep, we watched you, and we still don't want you.
I saw that kid get his shoelaces tied up in the jungle gym. There's no way in hell we're having him on our team.
That's right.
So it's a shock to the system when you've been rejected for the first time in your life like that. And, I remember seeing one of my One of the guys in my rookie class, kind of, I could see he had tears in his eyes and everything. He's walking out.
Yeah, man.
Bad.
Yeah, and a lot of them, it's the last time they
played. Get a hold of yourself,
yeah,
man.
Like the Godfather, shaken by his lapels. You can act like a man.
Gave him the old movie slap.
Yes,
front
yes.
and back slap.
With a glove. You pulled a glove out of your pocket and slapped him in the face. Yes.
You're going to pick yourself up off the turf and yeah. you're going to get back in there. He actually ended up doing really well.
That's
in
the good.
Financial.
That's good.
Financial. Yeah.
Oh, not in football, though. Yeah.
No.
What's your biggest concern still coming out of training camp here?
My biggest concern is depth in the secondary. Yeah. And D'Angelo Ross did not help me feel any better about that. D'Angelo Ross
he won't be
missing
here,
an arm tackle on that kickoff return. Yeah. That's what started it off for me.
You mean D'Angelo Ross?
Who is that?
Who's on the team for special teams purposes?
Who is that just casually throwing a left arm in the direction of the returner
right.
before he goes another 30 or 40 yards? Oh, and then...
Yeah.
Okay, great. I guess this Tesla has been having a great camp and whatnot, but I don't know. Could you put up a fight a little bit?
Yeah.
So the depth in the secondary right now is a lot of guys who have been the depth in the secondary in previous seasons when we've thought, I'm not so stoked about depth in the secondary.
No. MJ Stewart might be starting at safety for you in week one if CJ Gardner-Johnson doesn't come back. That's not ideal. Yeah, like guys like Tremont.
It's not ideal, but it's also MJ. I'm not as concerned about the one safety. I like C.J. Gardner-Johnson a lot better.
Of course.
They've played good defense out there with M.J. Stewart on the field.
Yeah.
The cornerbacks are just so crucial.
Yeah.
And right now, I don't feel all warm and fuzzy inside about it.
That Jalen Smith, the third-round rookie, is as vital to the infrastructure of the secondary
yeah.
right now. You're right, is an indicator. You know, he's been a pro for 2 months or whatever it is. And now, like, boy, if Jalen Smith goes down, you drop off a cliff at that slot corner spot.
Well, and that's where, too, if Jalen Petrie goes back and plays safety.
Yeah.
Then, or if Miles Bryant goes back and plays safety, then that depth at cornerback is tested even more.
Yep. All right, so we'll get into that. I think that is a big one. I think there's other concerns as well coming out of camp, but overall pretty good. Now, running back... And by the way, Astros take 3 out of 4 from the Orioles this week, and we'll dig into that at 6:45 today on the show. We had Damian Pierce on the postgame show on Saturday. And Damian Pierce, always brutally honest, assessing himself, but I think also let us in a little bit, at least for him, on what the issues were last season for Damian Pierce. This is some audio you won't want to miss. This was Damian Pierce on the postgame on Saturday. We'll hit that coming up next. Stay there.
Man, it felt amazing, man. It's been a long 4.5 months for me, but I'm just glad to put the pads on and get them back popping, man, just in time for the season.
All right, so that was Damian Pierce on the post-game show on Saturday. Clint Sterner and I talked to him after the game. 7 carries, 17 yards, so in the box score, nothing major. I thought he had a couple of runs, though, that looked like the old Damian. You know, there was a lot of moving forward with his runs, I thought,
yeah.
Seth.
Well, Eddie, and I think with the run game in general in that game, the box score didn't look great for any of the running backs, really. But when you look at the way the game went, the really encouraging thing was there were a lot of runs for first downs.
Yeah.
And they had 13 first downs by the run, 13 first downs by the pass. I think the Lions had 7 total first downs in the game. The Texans were just – they just dominated the game in a lot of ways. But the really interesting thing was, okay – you're getting run for 2 yards here. You're getting a run for 4 yards there. You're getting a 3 yard run, but it's for a first down.
Yeah.
The number of third and shorts in that game, like two thirds of the third downs were 3rd and 5 or less.
Yeah.
And it's just, you look at the Chiefs last year. They didn't have great offensive numbers, but you know what they did? They got to 3rd and 3, 3rd and 4 a lot, and they played good team football. And like the Texans were the exact opposite. C.J. Stroud had the second most 3rd and 10 pluses in the league last year.
Yeah. Numbers are interesting because I think if you're a team that averages like 4.5 yards a carry or more, it doesn't really matter how you get to that number. You're probably a pretty good offense. The Texans, if I'm not mistaken, if you take out Mertz's 2 scrambles and the 2 kneel downs at the end of the game, averaged about 3.9 yards per carry in that game, and they ran the ball a lot. Jawar Jordan had 15 carries. Damian had 7. There were other backs that were carrying the ball in there. And Woody Marks had a bunch of carries, 6 carries, I think, in that game. The 3.9 yards per carry is interesting because That's about what the Texans averaged last year. The problem last year is so often they would average 3.9 yards per carry because Joe Mixon would break off a 60-yard run, and then everything else for the rest of the game would be this slog that was either run stuffs or negative runs.
Yeah.
And this 3.9 yards, to your point, was, hey, it's getting them in second and seven. Hey, that's getting them in third and three. That, to me, when you have a team that's just not an explosive run game, tell me what the down and distance situations are. You know, because, again, the number they averaged per carry in that game on Saturday was about what they did last season, but they're able to stay on the field. They're able to control the clock. Now, again, none of the guys that were doing this on Saturday are going to be on the field come week one against the Rams, but the hope is, and when the glimpses we've seen of the ones in situations, they too have been able to do that.
No, and I think that, so when we get to Damian Pierce here and some of the things he's talked about, it's very clear in him talking about Nick Caley and perhaps how it compares a little bit to Bobby Slowick, that there's a completely different mindset when it comes to the run game this year.
Yep, let's get to that. Here was Damian Pierce. Now take a listen to this. Clint and I both looked at each other. He brought up Bobby by name in this cut right here. This was Damian Pierce. Clint asked him about, hey, your role in this scheme versus your role in last year's scheme.
Man, I'm one of the guys who like seeing the whole line of scrimmage. You know, nothing against Bobby, but, you know, we was, you know, kind of precedent on the outside zone and going lateral before we go vertical. But Caley, he has a whole different approach to the run game. You know, he likes a lot of duos, counters, tight zone. And, periodically, he likes to throw a few tosses in there. But, like I said in the early interview, Caley kind of knows how to cater to the guys on the field and our skill set. So I feel like when he see me in the game, you know, he keeps my shoulders square because, you know, that's when I'm at my best, I'm my most dangerous and I'm my most comfortable. So that definitely is some truth to what the commentator was saying. I feel good. Hopefully I look good out there, man. You know, I'm just glad to be back out there.
Yeah, and I don't think that's a shot at Bobby Slowick. I think it's just two different methodologies, and that this one fits Damian Pierce better. And Nick Caley is just by virtue of his play calling all throughout training camp, both in practice and in the games, has shown that this is an offense that he wants to be about blunt force trauma.
Yeah.
That he wants to win physical battles, and he wants his running backs to always, as D'Amico says constantly, every time he talks about running backs, he talks about running behind your pads. Like D'Amico, who's so good at kind of simplifying things for players and just letting them understand what the assignment is,
yeah.
I think they want those two extra yards you get. They keep it from being instead of second and 10, it's second and seven, and you can work with that and just above all else, just keep moving forward. And that's what the run game is going to look like. And then the next test is, all right, you get into the regular season. Okay, which of these guys are... It's one thing to bully people in the preseason. It's another thing to bully people in the regular season when all the starters are out there. That's the next big test.
Yeah. And I think Damian ends up making the team in part because I don't think Joe Mixon is going to... My gut tells me Joe Mixon isn't going to start the season healthy. We haven't even seen Joe Mixon like out at practice. Like he's been persona non grata. And for people who, if Damian ends up making the team, for people who are confused about that, maybe, hey, Jawar Jordan's looked better. Damian hasn't practiced at all. They kept Damian around last year when he was not a scheme fit at all.
Yeah.
My guess is that there's a big part of them that does want to see what Damian looks like fully activated in this scheme.
Something that fits
him better.
The two guys that have been injured and haven't done much in training camp for Damian Pierce and Christian Harris. Those are the two guys on either side of the ball that you kind of been wondering about, okay, what exactly are we going to see? I don't think either of them looked nearly like the most impressive versions of themselves. And Christian Harris got about 13 snaps in the game. And he did, you know, wasn't awful, but also didn't really show up and do some of the things that we've seen him do. Didn't necessarily have any opportunities to go sideline to sideline. I mean, his range is one of the things that's really impressive. Didn't get tested in coverage all that much. But you're almost taking a baseball mentality at this point. You know, I think the coaches are where they know what the upside of both these guys are. They know that they're coming back from injury. And now it's just a matter of, okay, hey, we got Lance McCullers coming back into the fold. Let's see how he does. Is that the name you wanted me to use?
Is that the name?
Yeah.
No. Use Javier. Oh, no, wait.
How about Yordan? Okay, yeah, we got Yordan coming back. As Yordan goes, So will go my optimism about Christian Harris and Damian Pierce.
There you go. There you go. If you're looking to feel good about Nick Caley and how this team is being coached, this was Damian Pierce when we asked him about pass protection by the running backs. It sure does look like you guys have been more on point with that here in the preseason than you were at the end of last year. What about that, Damian?
Wholeheartedly agree. Well, for one, it starts with Caley and Cole. Cole is like our offensive line coach. So those two guys do a great job of, you know, making it clear and concise for everyone, not just the running backs, everyone involved in pass protection, from the quarterback to the O-line to us, and then even receivers being dialed in on their hots, you know what I'm saying? So big shout-out to those guys. And then just to add more, you know, definition and, you know, being more concise on it, our running back coach, Coach DB, does a great job of making sure we're mentally and physically prepared every day, you know, whether it's drills, whether it's film, whether it's just walking and talking. You know, we spend our time on in the running back room is pass pros. Because, you know, DB has a thing. He says, you know, we know how to run the ball. You know, we wouldn't be here if we didn't know how to run the ball. So just make sure we protect the ball and protect the quarterback. So we spend a lot of time on that, and everybody has done a great job of buying into it and just, you know, putting our pride and joy into it. You know, we're very prideful about pass protection. We're very prideful about keeping seven off the dirt, because, you know, when seven is clean, we have a great chance of winning the football game.
Of the things that have jumped out in the preseason, if I could have a wish list of the things I would carry over into the regular season, if that's not at the top of the list, it's pretty damn close.
The
improvement in the pass protection.
Right. Now, that one, I look that as – I don't think Damian was trying to take a shot at Bobby Slowick, but I interpret it as a shot at Bobby Slowick, and that my biggest complaint with Bobby was it always seemed like he was probably – he was hell on wheels on the whiteboard. When it came to actually coaching things, I never got the sense that guys were being taught or coached properly, whereas this is, hey, what's the most important thing? Keeping C.J. Stroud healthy. Let's spend time and on it. Let's be sure the offensive line is working with the running backs on pass protection and all those things. And it showed up. I mean, that if there's one thing I'll take from this preseason where I won't say, well, it's just a preseason, it was very clear by virtue of every single running back out there that I can remember had impressive moments in pass protection, including your young guys, your rookies. And that's not normal, especially for your younger running backs. Usually you're cajoling your running backs to give a damn, your young running backs to give a damn about pass protection.
Yeah.
And that's my most rock solid indicator in my mind that Caley might really know what he's doing, because that was very, very impressive. Whether it was preseason, regular season, whatever, that was impressive.
Here's one more from Damian Pierce. Of course, he was brought back pretty slowly from his injury. He finally was able to put on the pads within the last week, got in at the joint practice and got seven carries in the game on Saturday. Was it difficult watching off to the side while guys are competing at your position?
For sure. You know, especially in the deep running back room, we got, you know, as a competitor, you know, it kind of sucked. And, you know, I had my moments of, you know, mentally going through like, damn, I want to be out there so bad. But just looking at the big picture and looking at the end goal of what I want for myself, it kind of brought me back to earth. And with that end goal being, you know, when I get back to the field, I want to be dominant. I want to be explosive. I want to be the me that I know I can be. And not prove anybody else wrong. I just want to prove – I'm more so focused on proving myself right. You know, the last few years, you know, I kind of just let everybody get to me, you know, rightfully so. You know, this is NFL. You know, everybody look at what we do. You know, from the moment we report to camp to the last game of the season, you know. But just being on the sideline, focusing on the main goal, and just getting back healthy so I can get back to my brand of football and my style of play.
You know, when he said that he maybe let everything get to him a little bit, and I thought he was talking about kind of just chatter by the media
noise.
or fan base or whatever it is. It reminded me a little bit of Arian Foster, and that Arian went through on a much bigger stage and under more scrutiny, got so much love as a young player, and then all of a sudden started to see the flip side of it, and it wears at you, because once you let people in, then all of a sudden they affect you, because you're taking in all the positives, and then all of a sudden, wait a second, these people that said they loved me are now saying unkind things about me.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a shock to your system.
Yep.
So I like that Damian kind of got to go through that and learn that lesson, maybe without it being quite as drastic, that you gotta focus on the guys in the building and try really, really hard to just I mean, it's nice to appreciate the nice things people say about you, but you always got to remember that largely that's not actual love.
No,
you know, that's
no.
That's not actual respect. That's you helping them win their fantasy
yeah,
drafts.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. Well, and you know who's really good at parsing that out? At least he's, you know, by the talking the talk is CJ Stroud. Because he'll say all the time, like, yeah, well, they'll love you 1 minute, and then the next minute, you know, they hate you the next minute. Sports hate you.
I think he knows that academically. I think all young players these days go through you got to get genuinely callous at some point.
That's why I said talk the talk. Like he says the right things. Yeah.
Well, CJ went through it to the epitome at Ohio State, and now he's getting it on the flip side. Where now I get the sense from a lot of Ohio State fans, the ones who will like calm down and speak at a normal heart rate, it is that
all five of them.
Boy,
yeah.
Boy, a lot of these Ohio State fans sure do seem to love CJ Stroud a lot more now than they did when he was at Ohio State. That, especially if they're also Browns fans, you know? They're looking at it, and they're like, well, sure, I might have criticized CJ a little bit at times back when he was in Columbus, but of course, that's all neither here nor there.
He's not the one losing to Michigan anymore. It's somebody else doing that. Although they won the national championship.
CJ had an indoctrination into it earlier about being careful about all the praise.
For sure. Text message, Sean, you had a great take on Woody Marks looking a lot like rookie Dameon Pierce. And by that logic, Dameon Pierce should be the one who gets cut in 2025. My take on that, I think I had it on this show, I think, and I know I had it on the postgame show, was that if this team were not as good as they are, if they were like the team in 2022 that Dameon Pierce was on, I think Woody Marks would be getting a lot of that same Dameon Pierce love that Dameon was getting in 2022, when for some reason he was behind Rex Burkhead to start the season. Woody Marks has popped in practice and in these games. I think Woody Marks, especially if Joe Mixon is hurt, I think Woody Marks is going to be a much bigger part of this team's offense than people anticipate early in the season.
But he's also a different type of running back. So that's where I think that Woody Marks is almost in a separate category than Dameon Pierce, that because of his catching ability and everything else, and he's a smaller guy. Right now, you look at Dameon Pierce as, all right, this is your classic all-purpose back. Right now we have two other classic all-purpose backs, Joe Mixon, who might not be playing in week one, and Nick Chubb, who has looked good so far. But you can't expect that he's going to get 25 carries in a game, a few games in a row, and be just fine. He's still coming back from his knee injury. He's an aging running back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So for where the team is right now, I think they're kind of in separate conversations.
Do you think Woody gets touches in week one again?
Yeah.
If Joe Mixon is hurt, do you think Woody gets touches?
Yeah, especially. Yeah, I think the classic simple thing is, okay, at the very least on passing downs, Woody Marks is the guy you want in there because he's shown that you can count on him as a pass protector.
Yeah.
Usually the thing that keeps guys like Woody Marks off the field is, all right, well, great, he's a receiver, but because he can't pass block and because maybe he's not that good of an actual runner, then the defense, it's easy to, the defense can just treat him like another slot receiver or something. Where Woody Marks, because I think he's got genuine value as an all-around runner, and because he can pass protect, there's no reason not to play him early on.
Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Headlines up next. We'll dig deep on the weekend that the Astros had. What did we like? What do we not like? They're up by two games in the AL West. We like that. We'll dig into the Astros weekend in Baltimore coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
Ball just on the Detroit side of the 50. Slovis steps up to the center. Eli Cox takes a knee, and it is over. The preseason comes to an end with a dominating performance by the Texans, 26-7. They go 2-1 on the preseason, and look forward to the opener, September 7th at L.A. Let's go. Houston, ready for the Rams.
I'm Mark Vandermeer on the call. Final call in the final preseason game on Saturday. 26-7 win over the Detroit Lions, and now we wait and see over the next day or so, Seth, who makes the cut, who doesn't. We'll dig deeper into that at 7 o'clock today. But I would expect we'll start to see, although you pointed this out, we didn't see the names come out of the Texans till the day of the deadline last year.
The vast majority of the cuts last year were made a few hours before the deadline, but there were leaks here and there. Yeah. I can't remember which or what, but and sometimes when you're trying to, some of the guys that you think might have some trade value, maybe you leak that out on a Monday and then the other part too is, you know, if somebody, well, the waiver wire doesn't start until the final cuts are complete, so yep. We'll see.
Graham Mertz, I guess, was the big story in that game, which, you know, he's battling with Keaton Slovis to be the emergency guy at this point, but it was one of the best preseason performances I've ever seen.
It really was. It came out of nowhere. Yeah. Graham Mertz threw three interceptions in his debut. It did not look great. I don't know if all those interceptions were his fault per se, but it wasn't great. He hadn't done much. And then he comes out there looking like a more athletic version of Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Listen, everybody, don't say that I'm making a comp to Tom Brady with him. But by preseason standards, that was about as good as it gets.
Both drafted in the sixth round, Seth.
Right? Good point. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So he's a bit better than Tom Brady. I thought the one notable thing about that performance is that he got really good pass protection. So the offensive line, which was a lot of guys that might not make the team or are definitively going to be backups, they did a better job in pass protection than in run blocking in that game. I'm not alarmed about the run blocking or anything, but it was notable that, man, Graham Mertz did a good job by and large of making use of a good pocket. Even that very first scramble he had, it wasn't like the pocket had broken down or anything.
No.
And he actually had a nice clean lane to run through
because
the pass protection had held up the middle. So, that was a very impressive. I feel right now like with Graham Mertz, it's almost like you've got the first two numbers of the Powerball. Yeah. You know, you're like, oh, all right. This is intriguing.
Right.
I know, by and large, most times I'll be let down, but let's see what happens here.
Ah, crap. 18. All right, so the Texans win on Saturday, and now we'll wait over the next day or so to see who ends up making the 53, who gets brought back on the practice squad. We'll dig deeper into that at 7 o'clock today. The Astros take 3 out of 4 from the Orioles over the weekend. Took the first three, couple of slugfests that actually made me more nervous. I walked away from the 10-7 win on Friday and the 9-8 win on Saturday actually feeling a little bit worse about things than I... You know, like, yeah, the bats woke up. Okay, that's great. But a third of your starting rotation right now, two of the six that you're going to trot out there, during this, they got a big stretch coming up where they play 22 of 23 days here. They're going to, I would imagine, especially if you have starters that are only going 3-4 innings at a time, you're going to go with 6 starters. Lance McCullers and Christian Javier are not good right now. They're
not
bad.
Yeah. And Lance McCullers is, I saw this stat and I didn't fact check it, but it sounds right that he's leading the league in pitches per inning. So I'm not, you know what? Sounds about it. It sure does feel like it. And neither of these guys have done anything that you feel you can trust. And the pitching staff, after being able to hang so much of your success earlier in the season on it, they've had the 8th worst ERA since the All-Star break.
Yeah.
So they're running on fumes until some of these starters start looking the way they're supposed to be looking.
Yeah, I mean,
if half of them can just start looking like credible pitchers, then please.
Yeah. Things I liked, I mean, the bats woke up. You won 2 slugfests. That was good. Christian Walker is in a bit of a groove right now, so that's good to see. And especially if Yordan Alvarez reportedly coming back for this series. Yordan went 7-for-15 in Corpus over the 4 games that he played in. He played Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and yesterday. He had 2 hits again yesterday, a couple of doubles, drove in some runs. Didn't hit a home run in Corpus, but that's fine. He was making a lot of hard contact, so that's good. I mean, it's Yordan. If he's making hard contact, eventually several of them are going to fly out of the yard. I did like, if I'm going to bring up Javier and McCullers, Seth, and how concerning they are, then I would be remiss not to bring up that Spencer Arrighetti was scaring me in the first inning yesterday, but seemed to straighten some things out. He took the loss, but he pitched into the 6th inning, and he had a stretch there where he retired about 12 guys in a row in the game. So Spencer Arrighetti had an outing where I feel better about him. I just need one of these I need one of these from Christian Javier. I don't know what Lance is going to be, because Lance has had a stretch this season where he looked like the old Lance again, and then all of a sudden, he didn't.
Yeah.
You know, he gets a foot injury, he gets a blister, he comes back, he's throwing 90 pitches in four innings. Like, this is, I feel like this is the McCullers we're going to get. I feel like if the playoffs were to start this week, McCullers definitely isn't on the playoff roster. And so that's where we are right now.
When I tried to tell you that, hey, Seth, or Sean, it's all cool. The trade deadline acquisitions for the pitching staff are the guys coming back from
IL.
Right
now.
Those are some horrible trades. This is the exact opposite of the Kikuchi trade, whatever that.
These are horrible.
The trade for Christian Javier off the IL, the trade for Lance McCullers, not a hot summer. Arrighetti, there's hope.
Yeah.
Arrighetti, there's hope.
Yeah.
The one positive from this, I did like that in the previous Orioles series, you saw three pitchers that you hadn't seen before, and they worked you over. You come into this series a week later, you make some tweaks, and then they score 20 runs on 20 hits in the 15 innings that were worked by those three pitchers.
Yeah.
So, okay. And bring Yordan back into the mix. That just it brings the stress level of the opposing pitchers up that much higher. So Christian Walker is looking a lot more like himself as of late. I feel good about that part of it.
That's the thing about Yordan coming back. Well, for one, he's a left-handed bat, which this team just does not have many of or any of. I mean, Jesus Sanchez bounced back nicely this weekend. But one, he's a left-handed bat. At a very basic level, there's that. But the thing about Yordan, like when Jake Meyers comes back, you can look at it and go, okay, Jake Meyers was hitting 306 or whatever. Whoever they've had in center field was hitting 250. He's 50 points better. That spot in the order gets better. Yordan Alvarez is a hitter who at his best transforms the entire lineup, or at least the couple of guys ahead of him and the couple guys behind him. It's not with Yordan. Like, the guy batting cleanup was doing this, and now you're getting a better guy. Like, Yordan is so good that pitchers have to be careful with the guy in front of him, and then it's a benefit to the guy behind him because more guys are getting on base.
Right, right. Yeah, and it's not even just and it's not just him, you know, knocking runs in or anything. It's the pitchers
the
having
mere
to
presence.
Adjust. It's the fact that you're going to see more lefties. The Astros right now have the best OPS in the league versus lefties. Yeah. But it doesn't really matter because they also see the fewest left-handed pitchers in the league.
Yeah.
So, like, by virtue of bringing Yordan back, you can start to see a little bit more of a balance there.
Yep, yep. All right, 53-man roster, the final debates. I think there's about 14 names battling for about six spots. We'll try and net it out in the most radio-friendly fashion. We've got acknowledgement. We've got a ton of acknowledgements to get to at 7:20 on the show. So we'll do that at 7:20. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
All of our coaches, it's important for me to get input from everyone. Our position coaches, special teams coaches, we're all in this together. So it's not just ultimately the decision will come down between myself and Nick. It won't be a rash decision because we've been thinking about this for a while, and it all works itself out in the end. And I know we'll have wherever those 53 guys are, we're going to have 53 tough guys who are mentally and physically tough and ready to hit the season run.
I feel like, Seth, if you either have a really good team or a really bad team, those are the ones that where there's very little controversy over who's making the squad. You know, the bad team, it's like, all right, it's, you know, one of those things like, all right, well, these, you know, it's hard to even find 53 guys to put on the roster. When you have a really, really good team, and I think the Texans have the potential, especially the offensive line that we've seen in the preseason is the one that we're getting in the regular season, acknowledging that there's room for improvement still, obviously, over what they're putting out there. I think they've got a chance to be a really good team. As a result, as we're doing sort of like this roster puzzle here, you know, I think some like the average Texans teams through the years, it felt like, okay, there's like 10 or 15 spots. I don't know what they're going to do here. There's maybe five spots on the team right now that are up for grabs, I think. At most, five or six, you know, if we're looking at the back end of the roster here.
The running back room, it gets really interesting. Mm-hmm. I think the offensive line gets interesting. I think the Jared Patterson and Juice Scruggs, I don't think either of those guys will get cut. If one of them did, I think it would probably be Juice Scruggs. But that's I think both those guys are kind of in a boat of they're still relatively young and they want to give them a go in this system to see how they do.
Yeah.
And we've seen a lot of guys so far in training camp look like the better version of themselves. when operating in this Nick Caley offense. And the running backs, though, are the one that's probably giving me the most fits, because it also includes guys that are fullback, you know, British Brooks running back slash fullback slash tight end. Yakob Johnson is a fullback slash tight end. So you got that third tight end position too. That do you keep Irv Smith? Do you keep the rookie draft pick? Do you keep the guy you traded for? Those are very hazy for me right now.
Yeah. I think offensive line was one of the easier ones for me, just because I do think Juice Scruggs and Jared Patterson and Blake Fisher are all making the team. Yeah. I think they've got their nine there. There's like 14 or 15 guys, I think, that are battling it out for like six spots. And it's not even like Irv Smith is battling Harrison Bryant for the third tight end spot as much as Irv Smith, and I'm just using him as an example, is battling Tommy Togiai or Jamal Hill or guys like that for the 52nd and 53rd spot. Like, oftentimes these decisions come down to not who is the best of these tight ends, let's say. It's do we want to go with four tight ends or do we want to go with six linebackers?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what it boils down to. Like, the names that I have here, the wide receiver room, do you think they end up keeping seven wide receivers like they did last year, where they kept six wide receivers and Steven Sims, who was listed as one but was really the return guy for the team?
I know. I think it, partly with what I've seen out of Nick Caley, it's that they're focusing a lot on the core of the offense, using a fullback, using multiple tight ends. And because of the Joe Mixon injury and the uncertainty about that, I think you end up keeping a normal number of wide receivers. Yeah. And you end up having just maybe one extra running back slash fullback slash mm-hmm. tight end.
Do you think Tommy Togiai makes this team?
I think he does. And the thing about Tommy Togiai that's interesting is that it's a classic thing that Pete Carroll would do in his defenses, or does in his defenses, which is you've got a very aggressive mindset up front. Your defensive linemen are just firing off the ball. But sometimes that can hurt you. So what you have is you have one guy that's a little bit more of a plugger that can line up head up on the backside guard and almost play like a linebacker behind the really aggressive penetrating defensive lineman. And I think Tommy Togiai fits that bill. I think that he's just so strong. He uses his hands really well. He's not all that, you know, athletic by defensive tackle standards, but he just flat out gets the job done. And a lot of the stuff he does really well, it's kind of stuff that you would see more in a gap control defense. But there's a place for that on this team. So I think it's just hard. He just consistently produces, and he imposes his will physically. That part of it, I think D'Amico's got to love. That, all right, he doesn't get upfield real fast, but he just bullies dudes.
Yeah.
And he tosses them around. So I think he makes the team.
They like him a lot. What do you think happens with D'Amico Autry? Is keeping Tommy Togiai impacts D'Amico Autry's situation? For those who don't know, D'Amico Autry has been on the PUP list for the entirety of training camp so far.
Yeah.
And hasn't gotten on the field all that much since he became a Houston Texan over a year ago.
I don't think it affects – you can keep five defensive tackles pretty easily, so I think it's more of a Kurt Heinisch
Well, let's list them. Hang on, let's list them. Because yeah. You got Mario Edwards, Tim Settle, Foley Fatakasi, Sheldon Rankins,
yeah.
Tommy Togiai. That's five.
Right. That's five.
Yep. So I'm saying, how does it impact D'Amico Autry?
D'Amico Autry, I look at as an end.
Oh, okay. So yeah. So you have
so that's like, so it's Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson.
Yep.
Then you got Darrell Taylor, D'Amico Autry, and Derek Barnett.
So
Dylan Horton is an odd man out. I think Solomon Bird is a tough one too, but yep. I think he probably doesn't make it unless they might decide. All right, we gotta keep some of this youth around. We might lose Dylan Horton and Solomon Bird if we cut them. So maybe it's between Derek Barnett and D'Amico Autry and Darrell Taylor. They make a decision between one of those three guys.
Well, and I guess I guess my point with D'Amico was less about tackle and end, and that they can still keep him on the PUP list and kind of kick the decision down the road for, you know, kick the can down the road for four games.
Yeah,
that's what'll be interesting to me, because they're among the bottom five in cap space right now. Cutting D'Amico Autry does give you some dry powder for salary mm-hmm. cap purposes. You save several million there. So I think that'll be an interesting one to see.
For anybody that hears that, that's not like a drastically bad. The Texans are fine in terms of cap space in future years. It's just right now they're operating a little bit. You like to have a little bit more cushion in case somebody gets injured or a trade comes open.
Trade deadline, yeah, absolutely. You want that dry powder. Do you think Jamal Hill ends up making this team?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think Hanson. I think Jake Hanson they trust more,
mm-hmm.
and they end up sticking with him and hoping that Jamal Hill, at least to begin the season, is a practice squad guy.
Do you think that Arthur Millett makes this team?
That's a great question, yeah. Sean Pendergast.
he's flashed a little bit.
Yeah.
And he's a
vet. I don't think so. And it's not because I don't like him, but again, there's a lot of guys that are not going to make this team that are going to get picked up elsewhere or that are 100% going to be on the Texans practice squad. But the overall trust level amongst cornerbacks right now, that's what I'm concerned about. There just aren't enough veterans that I feel really good about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a guy out there that the Texans are going to trade for or would like to trade for, I think, that ends up squeezing some of these younger promising guys off.
Tremont Smith, D'Angelo Ross, Arthur Millett, Miles Bryant, Jalen Mills, I guess sort of Jalen Reed, although he's been hurt too in camp, 6th-round pick. Like I almost feel like Jalen Reed, he's practiced so little and he's a 6th-round pick that if they were to waive him, they would easily be able to bring him back on the practice squad right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I guess, you know, when we were talking earlier about how a lot of the guys you have in the secondary right now are guys that have been on the team before when we were kind of worried about the depth of the secondary.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the depth chart from September of 2022, from September 1st, 2022.
That's some Google.
You got Tremont Smith.
Some Google
Tremont
skills
Smith.
Right there, man.
What's that?
That's some Google skills.
Our lads.
Oh,
but like Tremont Smith, your backup cornerback. MJ Stewart, your backup safety.
Yeah.
There are guys that, those guys have stuck around because they like, you know, they like them for a certain reason. And I think they make the team probably, you know, for those same reasons. But you've got to be constantly looking to upgrade some of that.
D'Angelo Ross has been on this team since 2022. I looked it up on his Wikipedia page. I'm like, how long has he managed to stick around? And
yeah.
He has stuck around, not only been here since 2022, but managed to survive a coaching change, you know, to D'Amico Ryan. You know, D'Amico likes him, obviously.
Yeah, that's the one thing that Nick has been really, really good at identifying cornerbacks in the draft. But it does just feel like there should be better depth. If you're that good at identifying the actual starters and what have you, and maybe this is just the hazards of always, like, hey, look, your backup secondary is mm-hmm. you're never gonna feel as good about it as your starters. It's just flat out the way the cookie crumbles.
Well, and especially when your starters in this secondary are these guys.
Yeah.
You know, like your starters are elite in this secondary. All right, so a few names kind of kicking around right there. We'll see. It'll all hash itself out, as D'Amico said. It'll all work itself out over the next day or so. The two big stories from around preseason over the weekend nationally, it appeared, one, Micah Parsons at the Cowboys game on Friday. They were playing the Atlanta Falcons, and Micah Parsons was laying down. He was the only Cowboy that wasn't wearing his jersey. Like, even the guys, even the starters who weren't playing were wearing Cowboy gear. Micah Parsons was in regular, like, civilian sweats, laying down on a medical table while the game was going on. Almost looked like he was taking a nap over there. To which Brian Schottenheimer, the new head coach of the Cowboys, had to answer questions about that, saying, hey, I'm going to talk to Micah about this. But this all appears, Seth, to be woven into the current contract situation with Micah Parsons.
It's hard because Micah Parsons is just kind of a free spirit to begin with. So there's a lot of things you could look at that Micah Parsons does or says where in the past, before there was any of this contract stuff, you might think, is he trying to send a message? And you realize, oh, no, it's just Micah Parsons being kind of goofy. I don't know.
This doesn't feel extreme to you?
Not wearing the jersey is the big one. That feels like that's like you're very clearly not like one of these things is not like the other.
That's bigger.
It's very conspicuous.
That's bigger than laying down on a medical table during a game while a game is going on and everybody else is standing on the sideline watching the game.
Because he wasn't riveted by the Sean. Not everybody's watching the game on the sidelines during a preseason.
No.
Game.
I understand it. No, I get it. Yeah. No. Humor me here for a second. Like, not standing there and laying on the medical table is a little much. Would you admit that?
No, I feel like it's one of those things that gets noticed because people are specifically looking to see what Micah Parsons is doing on the sideline.
Yeah.
So I don't. If I had seen it and it was just some random older veteran or something, I would have been like, oh, whatever. He's just, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I can't. But you combine it with him not having the jersey on, then it's something different.
That's interesting. Okay, yeah. No, I know everybody's not interested in the game
standing
on the sidelines.
It's like every now and then when they catch somebody taking a whiz on the sideline and they make a big deal out of it. I'm like, that happens. Well, it used to happen every single game. Now they got the medical tent.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're still doing it. They're just doing it inside the medical tent.
Yeah, gotcha. The other thing was Shadur Mania lasting all of 2 weeks in Cleveland. Well, it's still lasting for a lot of people, Shadur Mania, but in terms of him being even reasonably close to a discussion of being the starting quarterback for the Browns, that ship has now sailed.
And it's reached the peak of idiocy when it comes to people's conspiracy theories, because there's certain... I saw somebody yesterday on a comment that got a lot of traction that one of the reasons that they're blackballing Shadur Sanders is because he's a Christian. And I'm like,
that's the first I've heard of that. I didn't see that.
Dude, oh, man, when people bring – that's when you know it's a crossover hit, because those are people who aren't actual NFL fans that just somehow – somebody heard – they heard it from somebody that, like, oh, well, yeah, you know what they don't like about him is he's a Christian. This notion that there's, like, six Christians in the NFL, as opposed to – no, the reality of it is – it's like you're working in a Chick-fil-A when you're working in an NFL team. You can't walk 3 feet without stumbling over somebody's Bible or something. Yeah, it's very religious workplace.
I guess just to get people up to speed on what exactly is going on in Cleveland. So this is what happened this weekend: is that Joe Flacco started the game against the Rams. Was very, very good. Dylan Gabriel then came in and went like 11 for 19, and he looked solid. I think threw a touchdown pass. Like, Dylan Gabriel looked good. In came Shadur Sanders with the threes, and he was 3 for 6 for 14 yards and was sacked 5 times, including this 23-yard sack that you're about to hear right here.
Sanders being pressured, spins away again, keeping the play alive. The fans love it, but that's one of those plays where – maybe he's got to roll out and throw it away, huh?
Yeah, maybe, you think? I mean, the line of scrimmage, the line of scrimmage was the 46-yard line. He got tackled at the 23. So the other thing we should point out is that with 2 minutes to go in the game, with the Browns trailing 17-16, Kevin Stefanski, instead of leaving Shadur in, chose to bring in Snoop Huntley, who, by the way, was cut this morning, chose to bring in Snoop Huntley, the fifth quarterback on the team, to come in, and he actually engineered a game-winning drive. They kicked a field goal. They win the game. So the things that people were most upset with, the Shadur fans were most upset with, were one, Kevin Stefanski put Shadur in with the threes, and he wasn't calling the plays that he was calling for Flacco.
He's not calling the same plays.
Gabriel.
He saved the good plays for Gabriel.
That's number one. And number two was replacing Shadur, not giving Shadur a shot at redemption at the end of the game. He brought in Snoop Huntley, who's not even going to make this team.
Yep. The Snoop Huntley thing, I can see where people would raise an eyebrow at that. There is part of it that you do try to be a place that allows guys a chance to play in the preseason game so other teams can get film on guys. And it's more of an indicator to me that, yeah, they'd already made their decision about Dylan Gabriel, which people out of Cleveland have been saying for a couple of weeks now, that they like Dylan Gabriel more so than they like Shadur Sanders right now. It's not like Shadur was going to have a chance to earn his spot on the depth chart or whatever. He's going to be on the team. So the Snoop Huntley stuff doesn't bother me one bit. I think, though, I think it's the thing that's bothering me is I don't have an issue at all with the way they're handling Shadur Sanders, but I also don't like leaning into that one really bad scramble as somehow the evidence that obviously he sucks or something like that.
No, of course not.
There's plenty of young quarterbacks who do the same thing. It is part of his scouting report that he holds onto the ball. If you watched in college, he holds onto the ball too long. He tries to make something out of nothing. So it's something that he does need to continue to work on. But it's the sum total of everything the Browns have watched during training camp and the OTAs and everything else. And Dylan Gabriel has worked with the ones more. I mean, people bring up training camp stats and completion percentages and what have you. Yeah, part of that is that Dylan Gabriel has been going against the first team defense a lot more than Shadur Sanders has. The biggest thing that you brought up that makes the most sense, Sean, about the conspiracy theories about Shadur is exactly what would be the motivation for the NFL at large to have some kind of campaign against Shadur Sanders? He's not that big a deal.
No.
Like, in terms of, like, there's nothing he does controversially that's different than so many other young players in the NFL. I don't understand where I don't even get why there's conspiracy theories that the NFL wouldn't want Shadur to get drafted high or to be playing or what have you, because there's nothing unique about him when it comes to things the people don't like his personality. I forgot about how so few guys with unlikable personalities.
He's the first unlikable guy to be drafted into the NFL ever.
So that it cuts it off at the knees. It doesn't make any rational sense. Now, have the Browns made the wrong decision? Possibly, sure. I could go with that. But you're also, in trying to paint the Browns as the demons here, like, this is a team that was the only one out of 32 teams that drafted Shadur.
Right.
Which was probably stupid, because as soon as they don't make Shadur the starter, they become enemy number one in people's minds, where it doesn't make any sense at all. You're somehow more angry at the Browns than the 31 other teams that didn't draft Shadur Sanders.
Well, and this is where I feel bad for Shadur. And by the way, like, it has turned some otherwise intelligent people into saying some of the dumbest things. I saw a Twitter account yesterday. The Browns made a bunch of cuts yesterday. Yeah. And this person said, oh my God, look, they cut four of the offensive linemen that were playing with Shadur, as if that was a morsel of the conspiracy theory. And I'm like, yeah, that's what teams do the 2 days before the deadline, is they cut third string offensive line. Sorry, he's third string. And I feel bad for Shadur in all this, because you know what Shadur hasn't been doing? He hasn't been fueling any of this. Shadur has handled his business, by all accounts, and from everything I've seen with my own eyes, very, very well. What the Shaduraholics are doing right now is they are making it harder for Shadur to stick somewhere else if the Browns decide to move on. I can tell you this right now. If the Browns wanted to keep four quarterbacks, with Shadur being one of them, but they're worried about wasting a roster spot on keeping four quarterbacks, put Shadur on waivers. Nobody will pick him up with the way all these lunatics are acting right now. Do the other 31 teams want this sort of drama in their building right now with Shadur? I feel bad for Shadur. The people who are out here pumping up this conspiracy theory stuff are doing Shadur Sanders zero favors right now.
Right. And no, so much of it. I mean, there's people out there. Again, it's a crossover hit, so there's actual non-football fans weighing in now, too. But some actual football fans saying that it looked like the offensive linemen weren't trying as hard when they were blocking.
I mean,
the guys fighting to make the team, just trying to feed their own families.
Right.
And this isn't an exaggeration with those guys. They are literally trying to feed their families.
Yes.
A lot of those guys that get cut today are never going to get a job in the NFL again.
Correct.
So they're literally trying to feed their families. Because they're somehow involved in this vast conspiracy to keep Shadur Sanders down.
Yeah, it's wild, man. All right, let's do Acknowledge Me. Let's get to these. We got a bunch of acknowledgments we need to do. A whole bunch. We got some football. We got some baseball. Got some local business. It's all good. Let's start with Nick Caley, Texans offensive coordinator. This just looks like a much better coached offense through the preseason. Preseason's done now. This looks like, so far, the first step, which is the implementation, the installation of the offense, and getting a bunch of new guys on the O-line. This thing looks like it's moving in the right direction. You know who loves him some Nick Caley? Rob Gronkowski. This was Rob Gronkowski. I think this was with Edelman on the podcast. Yeah, this was Gronk talking about Nick Caley.
Who's the offensive coordinator?
The offensive coordinator? Shout out to Nick Caley. He was my tight end coach for a couple years here in New England. And he FaceTime called me out of the blue a couple weeks ago, man. And Nick Caley brings the absolute juice to the table every single day on a daily basis. He loves the game of football. He's a smart coach, knows the offense inside and out, knows all the tricks and traits to being a great coach. So I'm excited about him. Actually, I'm more excited about Nick Caley being the offensive coordinator and seeing what he does with this offense with C.J. Stroud and the other guys. I got Nico Collins, who's one of my favorite receivers in the league. Big guy. I love my big guys. You know, I just relate to them big time. Big guys that can move and make big plays, and Nico Collins is one of them. So I'm looking out for Nick Caley big time, and I think he's going to strive and be excellent. I think that's the right fit for him as well, to be a first-time offensive coordinator.
I just love Gronk's delivery.
Well, that's you know what, though? That was more of a – that was like polished TV Gronk.
Yeah.
You could tell, I think he was working from notes a little bit, but not in a bad way.
Right,
just, it was almost like he was getting ready to do his Sunday hit on the pregame show.
And still not super polished, which I love.
But in a way that's still endearing.
I love it. That's what I'm saying.
He let
yeah.
the emotion come through.
Yeah, no, I think
more
it's
so
great.
Than trying to, the first year he was on there, it felt like they had tried to put an orangutan in a suit or something, and it wasn't a good fit. Now I think he's found a good balance there.
Yep. And I love what he said about Nick Caley. I love that Caley's just popping open his phone and FaceTiming Rob Gronkowski for no reason a couple weeks ago.
There was another former Patriots player podcast a few months ago that had some really good words about. Oh, it was Cole Popovich.
Yeah.
It was Rob Ninkovich.
It was Ninkovich. Yep. Sure was. Yeah. Yep.
The Caley so far, and I said earlier in the show, one of the things that's most encouraging for me is the fact that the running backs have been so good in pass protection.
Right.
We heard Damian Pierce earlier talk about how much Nick Caley and then Cole Popovich, the offensive line coach, works with the running backs, and it just sounds like a different environment there. That's something that I don't take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Because it's the preseason.
Yep.
It's very, very clear that the running backs are much more capable, smarter, dialed in on pass protection this year. And that is 100% a reflection of coaching. So it's a really good sign.
Woody Marks, we acknowledge him for his first, albeit a preseason touchdown, but his first career touchdown.
Second down and four at the Detroit 9. Mertz under center, Marks in the backfield. Berrios motioning around. Here's the give to Woody, over left guard, across the 5. He's in! Touchdown, Houston! Woody Marks, power running into the end zone. Good blocking on the left side, and the Texans are back in front of Detroit.
I'm just saying.
That's going to be a hot key.
I am just saying.
Ben? Is it a hot key, Ben? Yeah, there we go.
We got Primal Andre on that one.
That's the only reason I'm acknowledging this right now. I wanted to play that play.
Couple notable things other than Woody Marks on that play. Austin Deculus buried his guy.
Yep.
So good job, Austin Deculus, on that play. But also Braxton Berrios had a couple of blocks. He gave a shove to a defensive lineman and then worked up to the second level. But the only thing I could think of was, if that were Tank Dell, people would be irate
right now.
Oh. Because he's a tiny wide receiver down in there on goal line blocking in the corner.
Nobody gave a crap about Berrios.
Yeah, I know. Well, I don't know. That's where the one thing that I would stick up with Bobby Slowick was, he's a football player. Like, you can't just... If you want him on the field, you're going to have to use him at times. You can't just let the defense know that, whenever Tank Dell or Braxton Berrios or anybody tiny is out there, they're just going to be aligned wide. Yeah, just don't even worry about him.
All right, let's keep it moving and acknowledge me. Brian Abreu, he's done a really nice job. He's done a really nice job as the closer of this team since Josh Hader went out with a shoulder injury. In fact, he came in those two slugfests. Man, Brian Abreu should have never had to pitch in either of those games. The Astros scored 10 runs and 9 runs, and they've got Abreu coming in games against the Orioles to have to close him out. But back-to-back night, Seth, he had a multi-inning save on Friday, had to get 4 outs, and then he came in on Saturday and saved that 9-8 game. A game they were up 5-0 in the first inning, and snap your fingers, and Christian Javier's giving the whole thing back by like the third inning of that game. But Brian Abreu deserves acknowledgement. He has been outstanding since becoming the closer for this baseball team.
There's no margin for error here on this either. It's the Astros currently have a 2-game lead in the division, and
I don't know how they're doing it, man.
Are they running on fumes? It doesn't feel like they're running on fumes. It feels like they're running on the wrong octane gasoline.
The bullpen is absolutely running on fumes. They're bringing in different guys every day that I've never heard of before.
Those aren't fumes, though. That's bad gasoline.
Okay.
You don't even have the right guys out there or anything. You're in a high performance vehicle running on 87 octane. I include in that the starting pitching.
Yeah.
Because those guys they're not themselves, or they're not the best version of themselves.
When I think of running on fumes, I'm thinking of just like being nearly on empty, and the bullpen's just taxed. Yeah. You know, forget about the names. Like, they're just getting overused and overworked. So,
It's multiple things.
Yeah.
They're running on the fumes of a lower octane gas.
No doubt about
that's
that.
That's a problem.
Zero
that's
doubt
a problem.
About
You've
that.
Got guys that shouldn't.
That's two problems.
Guys that you don't want to lean on, and those guys are tired.
Right, right. Yordan Alvarez.
It's like me running a mile. You're like, hey, who are you going to have run the mile for the Sports Radio 610
Sethers?
Intramurals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seth
Meister. It's going to be Seth.
Yep.
Yeah. It's going to be Seth. But no, wait, there's more.
Okay.
He's hungover.
I'm going through our roster. You might not be the worst choice, actually.
Actually, yeah.
I mean, what are we saying?
Very highly of our crew.
We will never win a team decathlon, for sure. Yordan Alvarez, quick acknowledgement here. 2-for-4 last night. 2-run double. That's- For Corpus, 7-for-15, 4 doubles at Double A Ball. Get this man back to Houston now. However you get him here, Uber, train, private jet, get him back to Houston. And that's the word on the street is he's back in the lineup for this. As long as he came out of last night feeling okay, he's back in the lineup for this Colorado series. So that's good. Thumbs up.
Everybody, if you see him driving back, just go ahead and give him a nice wave.
There you go.
Yeah. Give him the Yordan wave.
That's right.
Which is like a two-handed something like
just like
take
Seth,
your hands off the wheel briefly.
Doing it on the YouTube for you guys right there. Ben DiNucci, journeyman quarterback and master self-deprecator. He got let go by the Atlanta Falcons. I like this. Ben DiNucci was on the Cowboys last year. This is just funny to me on Twitter. And this is, if you're a journeyman, this is how you should treat it, man. All those trips to the airport, all those flights to go try out and work out for teams. When you get cut by the Atlanta Falcons in training camp, this is what you do. You post a picture of your airport bar beer and you tweet, not many beers better than the airport. I just got cut from the NFL for the 7th time beer. Trust me, you wouldn't understand.
Very few humans would understand that.
I want him on this team. I thought that'd be funny, man. You know, I'm a big airport bar guy, Seth. I'm a big airport bar guy.
Good move by him not like tweeting out the 7th and 8th and 9th beer too. If he... You know, that's what happens sometimes with these NFL cuts. It's they kind of they'll cut you and they'll get you to the airport right away, but it's the flight. They're sending you home on Southwest.
Yep.
And maybe AirTran back in the day or whatever. So you end up having some time at the airport.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful.
Yeah.
Because you got to be really careful because you might end up having a workout with another team the next day.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, man. Keep it between the lines, Ben DiNucci. Let's go. The Aggies. I'm acknowledging them for nothing having to do with football. I'm acknowledging the Aggies because they're getting Bucky's products at 3 locations on campus this fall. The first place outside of the actual Bucky's locations to carry Bucky's products like the Beaver Nuggets, and I would imagine there'll be some of the big brick Rice Krispie treats with the Fruity Pebbles in them. Some of the stuff, maybe even some of the sandwiches they have there. Who knows? But 45 different Bucky's products are going to be sold on campus at 3 locations for the Aggies. Good for
it's
the
a
Aggies.
Smart way for the Aggies to start branching into that side of the business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was licensing, bro.
That's
or
right.
I guess they're producing them and then just selling them elsewhere.
Yeah, man. Well, Bucky's are Aggie founded, but I think the founder of Bucky's is an Aggie, so that would stand to reason that they get the first dibs on campus of those delicious Bucky's products.
Are you nervous that Bucky's might be starting to stray too far outside their core business?
Outside of what they... Yeah, are they going to take their eye off the ball a little bit?
Yeah.
Should they stay? Yeah, maybe. Maybe a little bit. Yeah.
Why don't we have Payne and Pendergast products, licensed elsewhere? Why can't we be licensing billionaires, Sean?
Ben?
Like so many of these other celebrities.
Big book of business ideas, Ben. Become licensing millionaires.
Billionaires.
Right. Billionaires. Yeah, sorry.
Jeez.
Seth wants to run before he walks. Yeah. Billionaires. All right. Funplex closes after 40 years over there on the southwest side of town. Brandon Scott tweeted that he could do a documentary, Seth, on the times he spent at the Funplex through the 40 years. Might need the texters to weigh in on that. And we're only on here till 8 o'clock. But if you've got any Funplex memories, text in. They called it an amusement park in the article about this.
They called it an amusement park, and in the title they call it a theme park, which I've got an issue with the Houston Chronicle and saying it's either one of those things. It's I don't know what you call it, but it's one of these really cool. It was like one of the original Dave and Buster type places, but even with more. It offers roller skating and everything else like that. But it's all indoors. I don't think you're an amusement park or a theme park.
No.
Unless you've got roller coasters and whatnot.
Roller coasters, carousels, I would say, are a big part of amusement parks for the kids out there. Yeah.
So, but whatever it is, indoor entertainment complex.
Apparently it was a big part of Houston's fabric these last 40 years, and to that we memorialize Funplex. All right, last one.
I'll tell you what, with places like that, I know from personal experience with family members who have run kind of roller skating rinks and stuff.
Yeah.
Man, you got to be – it's the biggest pain in the ass is keeping the just keeping the bad eggs out.
Keeping
just
the drug dealers out.
Kid, you know, like the kid that – you know, the 27-year-old disguised as a 16-year-old wants to distribute a little bit of something to the kids. Yeah. Get them hooked. The pusher man. Yeah. The
pusher man. It's true.
It's hard to keep a place going that long. You got to be vigilant, man.
Yeah, got to.
Yeah.
All right. Jaden Rodriguez. Okay. His dad, Nick, is a P1 listener, and he DM'd me, and he said, hey, he wanted an antibodies for Jaden Rodriguez. I said, no. We're gonna acknowledge him. Freshman year. College baseball career. He's a pitcher at Cedar Valley College. It starts this fall for him. Went to Summer Creek High School. So we acknowledge Jaden Rodriguez. Young man, best of luck on the beginning of your journey. We thank your dad, Nick, for being a P1 listener. I love this, though, Seth. They live in the same neighborhood, this family does, as Tyler Milner and Sean Bajani. So that's, I mean, that's 2/12 of our, you know, producer slash on-air lineup
and one of them is the guy that we would choose to run the mile for us in the intramurals, and Sean Bajani.
Definitely Bajani, yeah. T-Mill looks like he could. Like, he's not heavy or anything
But he also has the look of the guy that's going to stop halfway through for a cigarette break or something, you know? He doesn't smoke, but it wouldn't surprise me.
He looks like
me.
He would. All right, so here's the question I have. And again, hey, Jaden, congratulations. We're acknowledging you for sure. Best of luck. What a great time to be alive, man. Freshman year, headed off to college to play ball. Who would you rather have as your neighbor, Tyler Milner or Sean Bajani?
This is no offense to Tyler here, but Sean Bajani, because of the old saying, good fences make good neighbors.
Literally.
And Sean Bajani literally builds fences.
He does.
So I would rather have him. I would want Sean as a neighbor because he would build a brand new fence, which would mean that I don't have to.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
He'd have a beautiful fence on his side of the lawn, and I'd be like, oh, okay, cool. My work is done on that side of
the lawn. It's tough for me. It's the same thing I thought of right out of the chute. Not so much that I need my fence repaired or anything, but like, boy, if I ever decided to actually fix something on my own, he would have all the tools in his garage that I could borrow. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have to buy them. Now, my guess is that Tyler Milner probably throws great parties as a neighbor, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And if he has a swimming pool in his backyard, which I'm not sure he does, then it would be Milner. Then the problem is I would have a swimming pool, and I would be afraid that of the two of them, Tyler would definitely be the one that I would find in my pool when I got home from work or something like that. I had a neighbor like that in my first house in Tomball. We put a pool in the backyard, and for some reason our neighbors thought that it was okay for them, like while we were doing something on a Sunday morning, to just waltz into our backyard and use our pool. Yes.
They just started using your pool?
Not for long, but yes.
What the hell?
Yeah, man.
The adults or just the kids?
Yes.
The adults. Just waltzed over like it was a community
pool.
Brought
their family over there. We came home one morning, me and my ex-wife, and they were in our pool.
And what did they say when you walked out? Did they?
How you doing? Yeah. So I let them have their day.
What the hell?
I didn't want to make a scene in front of the kids. So I let them finish up their swimming, gave some glares that kind of gave the impression, and then later in the day I walked over and said, look, I just want to draw lines right here. That's not going to happen again. Like, it's not.
Okay, this is one of the weirdest things I've ever heard somebody do.
100% like, true. Without, I'm not making it up.
What did they end up being an issue in other areas of being a neighbor? Or?
No, they were actually decent. He was one of these Bajani have a bunch of tools in his garage guys.
Yeah.
So he did have a use for me. But not enough to where I'm giving him membership to the pool I just put in my backyard.
He
must have,
you know what, maybe he grew up in a neighborhood where it was kind of like one of those older, back when people really actually knew their neighbors and everything, and the neighborhood kids would all just kind of use each other's pools and stuff.
Yes, yeah. Not a bad guy, but that's not happening. Yeah.
But even then, if you don't know the people, to just start, wow.
Yeah, asking to borrow something from somebody is different than literally walking onto their property and borrowing their swimming pool.
That's like, can I have a cup of sugar? And while I'm at it, do you mind if I urinate in your pool?
Yeah, right. And they had little kids, too, so they were probably peeing in the damn pool now that I think about it.
Wow.
I'm retroactively angry from 30 years
ago. Fascinated by this guy. I want to interview him. Let's get him on.
He's still... You love doing this. When I bring up some janky person from my past, let's get him on the show.
Find out what became of them.
He may not even remember. It was 30 years ago. But it's a true story. Football Talk on Sports Radio 610, presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days. You can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus. All season long, visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Tuesday Pettycast Preview. We got a couple of them here. Yeah, that's coming up next. Stay there. All right, a quick preview of tomorrow's Pettycast, which we'll do at 8 o'clock on Tuesdays. Imagine you'll hear this one. This was Jerry Jones. We didn't get to listen to Jerry Jones with Stephen A. Smith until after the show on Friday. Jerry Jones has been making the rounds lately, talking about this Micah Parsons contract situation. Takes another shot at David Mulugeta, like a direct shot at David Mulugeta here with Stephen A. Smith.
In the spirit of... not doing the old mother-dad deal. How many times have you seen the little rascal so clever go in there and mama told him, uh-oh, you're not going to get it, and goes in to daddy who only sees him at after 5 in the afternoon, wants to love him, and says, you can have it, son. You can have that before dinner. And he goes back in and says, mama, daddy said I could have it. That's the old mom-dad, been around since the beginning of time. I'm not going to go for that here. That's what's happening.
You're not going for it?
I'm not going for it. No, no. But we've had a very, very strong negotiation. Now, by the way, frankly, it wouldn't have made any difference what the negotiation was. Guess who has to be comfortable for this to work?
Micah.
And who else?
You.
Hello. There's not room for a third. There's not room for a third. This will be a good one.
It's wild.
It doesn't make any sense. But the whole thing is, every time I hear Jerry Jones talking about this, he talks as if the agent isn't involved in any other NFL negotiation, that somehow this is a unique situation where there's an agent involved.
Yeah.
And that's where I feel like he's trying to appeal to idiots or people who are easily duped or whatever. There's nothing he has said about this makes any sense.
No.
He's acting like an agent being involved in the negotiations is the exception and not the norm. That's exactly the opposite of what actually happens in the real world. It's so strange.
Did you understand the analogy? I mean, I get what he's saying about the mother and father dynamic in that situation. I have no idea how that is analogous to what's going on with Micah Parsons. None.
It's almost the only way that would make sense is if it were Micah Parsons himself that were trying to play off the mom and the dad, which I don't think Jerry Jones is accusing him of. And I don't know
what that was.
I had to remember the whole Little Rascals dynamic and whether there was an episode where that... I don't remember that being a big part of Little Rascals.
No. I mean, like, I understand...
The adults were never really in around, were they?
No. I mean, no. I understand the strategy of a kid doing that. I did it many times myself. I just don't understand where it fits into this Micah Mulugeta, Jerry Jones dynamic. All right, so that's number one. Number two, Pettycast preview here as we work towards the top of the hour. Boomer Esiason on his popular morning radio show on our sister station, WFAN, was talking with his co-host, Greg Giannotti, about Ring of Honor weekend in Cincinnati. Boomer Esiason is one of eight members of the Cincinnati Bengals Ring of Honor. So they like to bring those members back for the induction of the new members of the Ring of Honor. But Boomer revealed on his radio show, this is kind of how the Bengals handle business.
If you are traveling in for the weekend from out of town, we have secured a block of rooms at the Residence Cincinnati Downtown Hotel.
Wait, hold on.
What? Renaissance.
A block of rooms. Usually when people say a block of rooms, it's like a wedding thing and you have to go on there and say, I'm part of this party.
Yeah, but this is why they sent it. So the Renaissance Cincinnati Downtown Hotel at a preferred discounted rate.
Hold on.
So I can book my group rate for the Ring of Honor weekend. Rooms are limited, so please book directly for early and the best rate. We'll look forward to hosting you in the jungle for an unforgettable weekend. Don't hesitate to reach out to me or another guy on the staff with any questions. Thank you and Hude.
Hude?
Hude.
Who they think they are, making you pay for your own hotel room. That's what I would say.
You think I'm elitist if I say no to that?
I do not, Boomer. And Boomer, I should have set that up better. He was reading off of an email from the PR crew or the logistics crew from the Bengals.
This is an interesting one. And I got to go back and watch the whole part of Shannon Sharpe's podcast. Him and Ocho Cinco, Chad Johnson, were talking about it. Because obviously Chad Johnson knows the Bengals and... you know, that's where Chad Johnson, when he goes back to do alumni type stuff, it's with the Bengals. That's his
team. Yeah.
It sounded like Shannon Sharpe has played for two teams, the Ravens and the Broncos, and they do everything top notch for his class. And I think that the gist of it that I saw was Chad wasn't, it didn't sound like the little snippet I saw, it sounded like he didn't know any different, but he never really thought much of it. It's strange to me that Boomer must have other issues with the Bengals right now for him to bring this up.
Yeah. And Boomer's played for multiple teams, not just the Bengals. He's a little like Chad Johnson that way.
Yeah, so I don't know. The Bengals do a lot of things cheap, so it doesn't surprise me that they might have guys pay for their own rooms. But I also don't know how far out of the norm that is. There is, because this is one of the things that keeps me from buying an NFL team, Sean. There are all these little, when you start dealing with the former players, you want to do right by your former players. And yet the total number of former players gets pretty large.
Yeah.
So there's only so much you can do. I can't crush the Bengals for this. I don't know what the standard is or what most teams do. And I'd have to know how good is the discount. Am I getting like 10% off or am I getting an actual discount? Do I get more of a discount with my AAA than I do with my Bengals
AAA,
discount or not?
That AAA, CAA choice on the Marriott website.
You,
yeah.
You know what keeps paying? My NFLPA discount for rental cars. It's nice, There are times where I've thought about just like, I might just rent a car instead of owning one anymore because it's not bad. Yeah,
It might be
the
easier.
The only downside is that I get flirted with by the attendants
a lot on
my way out. They're like, are you an NFL player? I'm like, no. I say my husband is, and then and that's usually the end of it.
There you go.
Yeah, with 95%.
It ends the conversation with many people. Yeah. I'm a little sad. We're getting a lot of Funplex texts and texts on who people like better as a neighbor, Tyler Milner or Sean Bajani. We'll have to save that for tomorrow, I guess.
Yeah.
We'll bring it back up. Antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and a discount to you, Sean.
Thank you, sir. We are done. We are out of time. John Harris, Mark Vandermeer. It's a Texans Monday, and that's coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.